because they want to target people like you that are following the law and sharing how the tax law is there for people's benefit. And we should use it that way. Don't look at it any other way. That's the way you got to look at it, how it's there. And if they're going to go after people like you, then let's prove to them we're not cheating. This is what the law says. You don't like the law, change it.
Hi, I'm Wyatt. And I'm Grace. And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Expert Corner interviews with one of our expert advisors, Mr. Mike Pine, our CPA from Revo Taxpayer Advocacy Group, multi-time guest on our show. And Mike, so welcome back.
Thanks for having me, man. You know, I love talking taxes, especially on your podcast and on your show, because a lot of people hear it and a lot of people get to learn the truth, not all those rumors and lies out there. So thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. Excited to have you. And we're going to talk a little bit about an unfortunate event that happened this last year to me personally. You guys were a huge help in that, but then it turned into be probably a fairly positive event for us, because I did a 3-year really public case study on a property I bought in Cherry Log, Georgia, and was very vocal about it and very like it was literally on all my podcasts. We did a case study. We did Zoom meetings. We did webinars. We showed it really from start to finish, basically a 2-year case study from buying it to launching it to becoming the number one property in the market to all the good things that happened about it. And then we had some papers about this time last year from the IRS saying you have been selected for an examination. And my stomach dropped and my heart started beating really fast. And the first text that I sent was to you and Kevin and saying, guys, check this out. What do I do now? Right. And it was actually an audit. And one of the things, you know, when you get examined, they tell you what you're getting examined. Mm-hmm. And one of the line items on my examination was the depreciation that I took. And it happened to do with last time bonus depreciation before it came back this in 2025 was 2022 for 100% bonus depreciation. And we were pretty aggressive on that tax return. Mm-hmm. And I was freaking out. And you guys were like, don't worry about it. What are you worried about? I mean, it's unfortunate. It sucks. Nobody likes audits. But, you know, we got it handled. You did everything right. The T's were crossed. The I's were dotted. But it was scary, right? And it was a good 7 months. And so tell me, like, one, I know you guys are the best in the business. We've said this forever. And this is a game with that we have seen a lot of people talk about with bonus depreciation. And then when I got that audit, I was like, okay, well, this is, let's see if we actually know what we're talking about and are telling people to do the right things. And you guys were, let's kind of walk through that. When I called you, what was your thoughts, first of all?
I'd rather not share transparently, but I guess I have to at this point. I was a little excited about it because I knew that we followed all the rules. I mean, I was sorry for you, and yeah. I could tell that you weren't happy about this. And of course, it's no fun as a taxpayer to be audited ever. It's no fun dealing with the IRS, except for me in positions like this where we knew we followed the law, we followed the rules. You documented everything the way we needed you to document. We put together a killer tax defense plan before you even filed the tax return. Right. And even though it had been 2.5 years since we received the notice that we filed that tax return, we were able to call it up and see. It was no problem. It wasn't even a concern for us. I'm just sorry it took 7 months to put it to bed.
Right. Part of that was because if you guys remember back in right after Trump took office, Doge was in and they were cutting down all these people. And my original examiner quit, basically left the IRS. Like she took that early retirement, early resignation and was gone. And then we thought, well, we're kind of waiting to hear, is it going to go back on somebody's desk? Is it like it was already filed? Where, you know, the whole time I'm thinking my excitement, I did not share in your excitement of the audit. My level of was like crossing my fingers that this was not going to hit somebody else's desk. And it did delay it probably 3 to 4 months and ultimately came back on somebody's desk and we started working through that audit. You guys, I know, gave me a lot of confidence just telling me, hey, listen, don't worry. Part of this is And like you said, we had a really good tax defense plan mm-hmm. already before we even filed, right? Yeah. We know the rules. I collectively say we. I don't know the rules. You guys know the rules. I make sure I surround myself with the best in the business. And then when it gets tested, there is like that for me in my seat, it's like wondering, is it going to work, right? Yeah, right. We felt like with all confidence levels that it was, but until you get that letter back that says, here's the results of your audit, I'm reading the statistics, 89% of personal returns come back with changes and more owed, only 11% come back with zero changes. So I'm thinking to myself, man, I got a 10% chance that, I'm not going to owe more money. And those odds don't sound really good. I'm not taking those odds to Vegas, right?
Your probability calculations were way off there because you were missing the correct variables of, was I cheating on my tax return? Did I have competent advisors around me? And was I following the law? And we were 100%. You were, and it wasn't a problem. There's still never a guarantee. I mean, there's been times I've represented people in audits where all of that was true. The law was behind us, but we get incompetent examiners. And in your case, actually, it was my partner, Kevin, who represented you with the IRS. But in your case, it actually worked out better that first person quit because they weren't very experienced. And then we got a very experienced one, which I also think is a little fishy because we have a few other audits going on that we still haven't been recontacted for. So it's very possible, this is all supposition, but it's very possible that because it was out there so much, this Cherry Hill property that you'd done case studies for, that some of the IRS didn't like that. They're like, man, I don't want people saving this much in tax. Let's go get this guy. And the fact that it got pushed through, even during all the DOE shutdowns and layoffs and stuff, it might have been a target, but I'm even happier about that because they want to target people like you that are following the law and sharing how the tax law is there for people's benefit. And we should use it that way. Don't look at it any other way. That's the way you got to look at it, how it's there. And if they're going to go after people like you, then let's prove to them, we're not cheating. This is what the law says. Right. You don't like the law, change it.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I felt the same way. I thought that case study could have bit me in the butt a little bit of basically putting a target on our back and really kind of calling our shots with this, being very public about it. Now, there's good news and bad news to that, right? We ended up getting back the letter that says, hey, we've completed the examination and you have a zero changes. You owe zero money. Everything was done correctly. Kevin and the examiner worked very closely together. And like you said, a very experienced examiner seemed to be pretty knowledgeable about everything, which was nice. And we did have our T's crossed and our I's dotted. And we came back with zero changes. So at the end of the day, having a cherry on top of that case study of, from start to finish of selecting markets, going in and buying a property, taking it from zero to the number one property in less than a year, being very aggressive with our cost segregation and bonus depreciation and the tax returns and reducing our taxes significantly and then getting audited by the IRS and then saying, yeah, you did everything right. That's a pretty good case study. So at the end of the day, it actually worked out really, really well for us to be able to have a start to finish case study with the bonus depreciation taken and being aggressive and understanding what to do, what not to do. And I think that this is where it comes down. Now, I don't even blame really the IRS for, looking at this stuff and saying, hey, we don't like that these guys are out there talking about this because we kind of get lumped in together, right? You get lumped into the Instagram crowd. You get lumped into tax advisors that are talking about taking aggressive positions.
That are cheaters.
You and I both know that there's a lot of things out there that is very misleading and frankly not true about this aggressive stance and what you need to do and what T's to cross and what I's to dot. And so, in fact, I was just telling you right before we hit record, and I've called out on my podcast before, but there's another, guru/influencer out there that is talking about this and says, if you make over $200,000 a year, I can help you save $70,000 at minimum in taxes and by buying short-term rentals. And he breaks down a short-term rental and, cash flow, appreciation, note pay down, and then these massive tax advantages. And he said, you'll save $70,000 a year in taxes every single year. And literally that, so everything was correct until the every single year part, right? Yeah. We know the bonus depreciation is a one-time event. And it's that first year that you're going to materially participate and you, because you're taking all of it up front. So right. It's a one-time event to be able to have that massive tax savings, but it's just little things like that. The details matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so I'm curious as we talk a lot about this stuff, and it is out there, and it is something that we believe investors and especially retail, everyday high income W-2 earners should be thinking about taking advantage of. But what are some of the you know, maybe misconceptions or traps that you see people walking into with this?
I've heard so many. I mean, there's you have them on both sides. You have people out there, also big influencers, saying you can't take the STR loophole deduction unless you are self-managing the property,
yes,
which is absolute bunk. But then I also hear other people saying you don't have to do a thing as long as you document it right. You can take the STR deduction. You don't have to worry about a thing, and you don't have to materially participate, or you don't have to keep good records. There's so many misconceptions out there. The fact is you want to meet with someone or understand what the tax law is. And you do, Sean, give yourself some props here. You understand what the rules are. You've pushed us. You've asked, why can I do that? How come I can't do that? Why do I need to document this? Because you don't like documenting any more than any other entrepreneur does. But you understand it. And that's where people need to do, because there are so many misconceptions and so many, quite honestly, unscrupulous advisors out there. And they might not be bad. They might just not know what the heck they're talking about. I mean, how many times do we see that happen out there? So,
yeah. Well, and that's what I think too. I think that there's a lot. I mean, we're in this game of selling information and mentorships and coaching and gurus, whatever you want to call it. Right. And everybody is now all of a sudden saying, I'm going to try to make money with this information and have people pay me for this. And so I think that sometimes maybe they're well-intended, but they're misinformed. And so they might not be trying to be misleading or, you know, leading people down the wrong road intentionally, but ignorance is not an excuse with the IRS, right? And just because you didn't know doesn't mean that you don't have to follow the rules. And I think that there's, you know, hopefully that some of the misinformation out there is not ill-intended, but there are people who are going to tell you to do things that sound really good on paper that you can get in trouble on the back end. One of the things that, you know, that I hear all the time, I want to hit on, because I have this question on almost every single one of my webinars. I do two live webinars a week. And anybody that's listening, go check out our links and on our podcast, and you can go check out what my weekly schedule is. Jump on a webinar, but we answer a live Q&A. Without fail, somebody is going to ask us and tell us that their CPA is told them that they cannot do this because they are not a real estate professional and or they don't qualify to materially participate because they don't manage their own properties. Well, that property we got audited on, I don't manage my own property. I have full service management. It is absolutely not true, but we hear that over and over and over again. At least once a week, we hear that on our Q&A. And you and I have talked about this how many times on the podcast? We've heard it for
dozens.
Years.
Yeah.
And you would assume that CPAs would at least look it up and say, you know, we assume that just because it's a CPA, they're giving us the best advice possible. You and I both know that book that the CPAs are supposed to know is how many pages? 7,000 pages-ish? I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of tax code. And it's really, really difficult to know all of it. And so they end up, you end up having people give advice and they regurgitate what they've heard, right, not necessarily what is true.
If you don't mind me just putting a little more detail here. I mean, so you have the Internal Revenue Code, and that's closer to almost 10,000 pages. That's the actual tax law, but that's not all there is. Then you have the interpretations of the tax law, the Treasury regulations, which are a lot more pages than that, 6-7 times that easily. But then that's not all there is. There's all the case law where the IRS has challenged people, and those people, thankfully, have stood up and said, no, you're not following the rules right or the intent of the law right, and they take them to tax court, and that's where you get a lot of your interpretations. Unfortunately, most CPAs, you know where they get their information, Sean? From the IRS. The IRS has IRS publications on just about every kind of tax topic there are. And the IRS says what they think and what's to benefit them. But every taxpayer has different facts and circumstances. And it's not black and white like the IRS tries to make it. But CPAs like to be black and white, most of us. Not me, but most good CPAs like to be black and white. But that's not how tax law is. It's not black and white. There's different nuances. So, yeah, I don't want to go on too much of a soapbox about that, but I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, and I think that, so even though it's coming from a CPA, like you said, there's different interpretations, there's case law, there's actual the code itself, mm-hmm. and then it's got to be like, okay, what does that mean? Like even one of the things we discuss all the time, it says, hey, listen, if you want to, one of the qualifications to take bonus depreciation, and a lot of people are looking at the end of the year, is the property has to be in service. Mm-hmm. Does that mean it's got to have somebody stay in it? Does that mean it's just got to be on the OTAs? Like we've got to, like that, it's not clear, right?
No,
you have to really be able to say, okay, you know, I love your way of putting it. Hey, here's what we say the gold standard is. Like we want mm-hmm. somebody in and out of there, arm's length transaction, put it on, get somebody to book it. Like we know that's going to qualify. The other is left up to, you know, let's see what the tax law, if you go to tax court and what they say. And we don't want to do that as little as possible. We want right. to be in that position, right?
That's why we like to stick in the gold standards and all those different rules in the civil STR yep. world, because if you can prove that you do satisfy the gold standards, or what we term the gold standards, then you're very unlikely to have to appeal an audit, or very, very unlikely to have to go to tax court. It's in those gray areas that sometimes you do have to do that. And like you said, yep. it's expensive, it's time consuming. You had a clear cut, easy, in and out, get audited, no change. And that was 7 months that you stressed. Hopefully next right. time you won't stress, but you yeah. shouldn't, Sean. Don't stress yeah. next time. I kept telling you, you wouldn't believe me, nor did your wife, but don't yeah. stress. But yeah, I mean, that was stressful for you. So you want to get the gold standard as much as possible. But if you haven't met the gold standards and the facts back you up, don't let someone tell you you're not entitled to that money. That's legally yours. The IRS is legally obligated to give it to you or let you keep it.
Right. And one of the stand, like we always say, with one of the big qualifications is you have to materially participate.
Absolutely.
The entire reason this is written up and the way that it works is these become active trader businesses, and you have to be an active participant in that business, right?
Yes.
And you have to be materially participating. One of the things that I'm seeing over and over, and I saw it at the end of 2025 specifically, we're going into 2026, we'll see it throughout this year, but it becomes very, very prevalent toward the end of the year, is there's a lot of people in my world, we don't do this, but in my world of taking people and selling turnkey properties and turnkey mm-hmm. situations, it's like, hey, listen, we'll find it, we'll set it up, we'll design it, we'll manage it, we'll do all this stuff for you. You just pay, you sign on the dotted line and pay for the property, and then you have this massive tax savings. Mm-hmm. There's one problem with that. There's nowhere for them to materially participate. At no. some point, you've got to be an active participant in this, you know, buying this property, setting it up, designing it, whatever you're going to be doing, you need to be participating. And so that's, again, leading people down that wrong road. And then they're like, yeah, we'll just, you don't have to worry about the hours. And I'm like, I hear this, and I heard it a lot toward the end of the year. I don't know if you did, but that was one of the things that I just was shaking my head over, saying, there's a lot of these people who are not going to qualify as a material participant because they're buying these turnkey properties, and they're sold basically, hey, listen, hurry and buy the property. You have this massive tax savings, but there's one huge qualification you didn't materially participate, and they're just overlooking it.
Agreed. I mean, there are some very non-gold standards way to maybe make that work and to make that work, and we've done it. But that's from what you're saying, and from what I saw also in December, you saw a lot of people pushing this. They weren't going to meet it if they're challenged. If they don't get audited, fine. But
right.
that's not a game I want to play. When I get audited, or when my clients get audited, when you get audited, Sean, I want to make sure and know, okay, it's not going to be an issue. I want to get back to the first kind of point you made, where you keep hearing from CPAs two things. One, you cannot do this because you're not a real estate professional, or you didn't self-manage. I think we covered a little bit. Self-managing, you don't have to self-manage. You just have to qualify as a material participant. And there is so much tax court law out there, case precedents out there on this, where the IRS was trying to force people to be considered material participants when the people are trying not to. We have 40 plus years of that data out there. Yep. And that's where you can play in. And you can still qualify as a material participant. If you self-manage, you're almost guaranteed to be a material participant. Yep. But if you don't self-manage, you can still absolutely qualify. The other thing that just drives me nuts is, and we still hear it today, 10 years ago, it made sense. Most people hadn't heard of the short-term rental loophole. Now, if you're a CPA and you're not, and you're saying, unless you're a real estate professional, you can't take depreciation against your active income, I think you're just lazy. Because it is very clear in the Treasury regulations that says any rental property that has an average period of consumer use, or in our terminology, an average lease length during the year of 7 days or less is not a real estate professional activity. Bam. So if it's not a real estate professional activity, a short-term rental, then it's either, it's a trade or business, and it's either active or passive. And that's where material participation comes in.
So. And it's, and it is, you're, it's still 100%. Now, those are the two things we hear all the time from CPAs.
Yeah.
Nope. You can't qualify unless you self-manage two and, or land, not usually from the same CPA, but the other one is you're not going to qualify unless you're a real estate professional. And that's, it's not even the same thing. I mean, I totally agree with you. That's just lazy, because it's understanding two totally separate things and understanding they are different. And they are, you know, there's, even if you wanted to be a real estate professional on a property that has an average lease length of less than 7 days, you can't, right?
You can't.
Well,
you can be a real estate professional, but working on that property isn't going to get you there. Because working on that property is not qualified real estate professional activities.
And we've
seen it the other way, where true real estate professionals, realtors, brokers that are real estate professionals and they have a passive short-term rental. We've seen where CPAs claimed it as, well, real estate professional participation and took it. And then it didn't survive under audit because it had an average lease length of 7 days or less. So you got to understand that difference. And if you're in this world and talking to CPAs or tax attorneys that don't know the difference between real estate professional designation, how it doesn't apply to short-term rentals, find someone different. Go find someone else or just don't believe them anymore.
How I don't know if you can ask if a CPA can answer this or not, but like I always – when I'm hiring somebody, I want to hire somebody that's been there, done that, right? Mm-hmm. Can you, like, would it be appropriate to ask a CPA, like, how many audits have you gone through with a, you know, of clients that you've actually represented, done their taxes, they took material participation, they did bonus depreciation, and then you had to survive an audit and passed. Can you ask
them. They just can't disclose who, unless someone like you that says, hey, I was audited and Revo represented me. Unless they've given you clear authority to share their details, you can't give any of their confidential or identifying information, but you can absolutely say what you've done. Just don't hold it against a CPA. If you ask someone like me, how many have you done? I'm like, I don't know a lot. Doesn't mean I lost count after a while, right?
Yeah, but the point is, you lose count because you've been in the game so long. You've done so many. You've learned. Like I always tell people, like, experience matters in a lot of things.
It does. But I also want to throw one more thing in there. Just because they haven't been audited a lot, like a lot of what we do with our clients and what I think helps is there's ways to execute the filing of a tax return that reduces the likelihood of being audited. I know that doesn't work with you and us, but it might have been all your podcasts and webinars out there on the Cherry Hill property. But we filed it in ways that would reduce the likelihood. And for most of our short-term rental clients, very few of them percentage-wise actually get picked for audit compared to industry standards. So just... whether or not they represent the audit, make sure they ask them this. If I am pulled for audit, what are the top three things IRS is likely to challenge me on, and how are we going to defend that?
Yeah. What would you say they are? I would, like, let me just see if I'm in the right, if I would think of it. I tell people all the time, make sure that you actually are materially participating. 100%. Make sure you're tracking that. You actually qualify as a material participant. Make sure I don't even know if I have two outside of that. That's like the number one thing that I tell people. When you like what would you say are the number, like the three things that they need to be thinking about?
Well, the top one actually is make sure you have documentation for the depreciation deduction you're taking. In your case, it was a cost segregation study.
Good point. Can you
establish that you didn't make up this huge deduction out of thin air?
Yes.
So I highly recommend you get a professional cost seg study. We had a client that almost was with you, found us, we interviewed, but then they chose to go with a different education group and a different CPA. They did it. They got audited. They came to us and we defended them. We were able to help them some, but there was a lot we can do because one, they weren't coached with all the things you coach them with. And by the way, they weren't making money. Two, they were told, go do the do-it-yourself cost seg report. The $500, go online, do it. And it was a crazy, ridiculous answer. And there was no way to substantiate it. And they got audited and the CPA wouldn't answer the phone at that point. And they came to us and we just had to get them a real cost segregation report. And obviously it was very different. But be able to substantiate the deduction you're taking. If you've got big spend on items where you don't have to get a cost segregation, or some other kind of documentation to establish how much that deduction is. Make sure you're keeping receipts. Make sure you're taking pictures. Have some kind of documentation because the IRS wants to know, did you really spend that money? Is a legitimate deduction. Then they want to know, well, wait, you took it against active income. How is it active? Were you a material participant? And so that's the number two, I would say. The big number two.
Yeah, that's a really good point that I didn't think about that is a huge mistake on a regular basis is I sometimes take for granted that everybody's getting these great cost seg studies fully engineered. You know, in our group, we've got a number between Troy and Chuck and, you know, those, like there's, we've got some really amazing cost seg guys in there that really can give you really accurate that you can stand behind. That's a really good point because I would, fail to even think about that because I just take for granted that everybody does that. That's not true. No. Lots of people will just give the IRS numbers. And even if they materially participate, they're just throwing out these big numbers on what they're trying to write off. And it can't be substantiated. The IRS is going to challenge it. And all of a sudden, they're giving you a fraction of the deduction you probably could have had and should have walked into it with.
But also in your specific audit, they asked not just for how do we come up with the depreciation. They asked, well, where'd you come up with these other numbers? They asked for they cherry picked 15 or 20 different expenses that were reported on your tax return. Yeah. Where did these come from? We had good records for every single deduction that was on there. We were able to establish it really quickly. So that those are important, not just for depreciation, but all of your deductions have some kind of record to establish it, to prove it.
Yeah. And I think that, we're talking about kind of some of the hiccups people can have, some of the things that they need to be thinking about, because we just want them walking into it with their eyes wide open. But we're both huge believers in this is a massive, massive advantage that investors can use to really accelerate and build their portfolio and really get it funded and, part of it funded by the IRS, by you're just reducing the taxes that you're paying to the IRS. You're either paying it to the IRS or you're going to be able to take advantage of these tax laws that are out there for us as individual investors and being able to expand your portfolio growth, save massively on your taxes. It is a massive, massive advantage for average everyday workers that are W-2, high income business owners, whatever it is, that you can take that money and put it into producing assets done correctly. Even though there's T's to cross and even though there's I's to dot and even though there is planning to have before, let's start talking about this right now, right? We're at the end of January. Let's be talking about what we should be doing this year and strategically planning. It's why I love what you guys do at Revo is we're tax strategists over there, right? It's like, hey, listen, here's what we're planning on doing so that you know what you have to do because in that one property example, and it wasn't some crazy expensive property. It wasn't some crazy case study. It was a very average type of a property for the most part. It reduced my taxes by $95,000, right? That's a massive tax savings for an extra $95,000 in my pocket that I could use to go buy more properties or whatever I want to do. Wouldn't I be willing to, hire some amazing strategist, be able to invest in understanding how to do this the correct way so that then I can just keep parlaying it. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that, they start stepping over dollars to pick up dimes, especially on the front end of this, because they're like, I don't need this yet, right? I'm going to go do this from what I heard on Instagram. And then I'm going to call Mike and Kevin. And then I'm going to, you know, try to figure this out. It's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, it is. And you're going to have limited support when it comes time that you need it. Like the guy just, or the example I just shared with you. Right. Let me ask you this though. So for that $95,000, which was only Fed taxes that you saved, you also saved some state taxes. Yeah. But for that $95,000 that you saved, if you were to do it all over again today, knowing you're going to get audited in 2.5 years, would you do it?
100%. 100%. Absolutely. Right. Okay. I mean, it's unequivocally, nice. Yes. Even with the stresses of it and all that stuff. I mean, that was the first audit that I've been through. You know, I don't want to go through another one, but you know, but I'm grateful for having now the experience of it. I mean, and yeah, that's a massive savings for the amount of effort and everything that we were able to do. And by the way, this is an asset that pays me almost $60,000 every single year in my pocket. Nice. Net, you know, so it's not like this isn't a loss leader for me, right? This actually makes us money as well.
Which let me go back to the first thing you were mentioning. You said there was a big some follower or someone on Instagram that mentioned you can save $70,000 year after year with an STR in taxes. Yeah. Only way you can do that is if the property is losing you a lot of money each and every year. Then you can deduct it, but that's a terrible investment. You're not making $60,000 plus in cash flow each year on it. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. Maybe he wasn't completely wrong, but he was showing cash flow. So he broke down the whole thing. So that's still, you know, so that's still going to throw him under the bus because you can't cash flow and have that massive tax savings. But even though it's a one-time event, let's talk about that. Cause a lot of people, let's say you thought it was every single year. Right. And so I've broke this down many, many times on a $500,000 property. You put $100,000 down and I have 5% appreciation, 5% note pay down. We've got 5% cash flow, cash on cash return. So you're making $5,000 a year. Like it's not like you're retiring on this property, right? Mm-hmm. And if I took $500,000 asset and I was able to cost seg out 125-ish, about 25% of the asset cost, which isn't that's not super aggressive. It's not, I mean, on a single family home, you might be, you know, somewhere close to that. That's gonna reduce your taxes even at a 27% tax bracket. Close to $40,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that one time year one return, by the time you get 5% appreciation, which is actually 5% of a 525 asset. So it's actually 25% on your money of 100,000 in. You got 25% there. You got 40% on the tax savings. It might be just one time, but then you got 5% cash on cash. You got 5% note pay down. That's a, you know, you're at 65, you're 75% return year one. Now, 40% of that goes away, but the year two, you're still sitting at 35% return on your money.
Yeah, that's with positive cash flow.
And then you're 100% paid back year two, and you go do it again, right?
And you take that 40% that you saved in taxes and use that for your next down payment and keep doing it year after year. Then you can save that kind of money each year.
Exactly. It's saying, hey, listen, let's figure this game out. Reduce our taxes down to as little as possible. And then not, you know, I'm a big believer in taking that money, putting it back right into that next property and just doing it again, rinse and repeat. Right.
And quite honestly, that's exactly why this part of the tax law exists. I mean, this is another misnomer I get all the time is, well, you need to pay your fair share. I don't think it's fair for me to save that money, or it's not fair for other people too. The whole reason these incentives are in the tax code is to help grow our economy. If you take that money and just send it to the IRS year after year, is that really helping the world? I mean, maybe one day, if the government is actually thrifty and uses the money the way they should, maybe we should be happy to spend the money or send it to them. But in the meantime, if you're growing businesses, you're creating jobs, people are going to stay at that place that you're renting out. They're bringing money with them. They're helping the restaurants. They're helping everywhere in the economy on that. You're growing the economy. That's why capitalism worked. That's why our tax code is good. You're not cheating. You're doing what you can to grow the economy. And by the way, you're also growing your portfolio with cash flowing assets.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, it's that argument of pay your fair share. I mean, I'll pay my fair share, but also your fair share can come in a lot of different ways. Like you said, it can, what if you pay zero taxes, but you stimulate a significant amount of business in a local economy that could really use it, right? And for other local businesses and all those different things. But it's, you know, and Now, one of the big things we hear, and the, kind of the last thing I want to touch on, is recapture. You know, when you, if you sell these properties and you took this bonus depreciation, you're going to have to recapture it, right? And so you end up, having to pay that money back. This is critical to why we say buy quality assets first, buy quality assets that are actually making money, that you're not losing money on, so that you're not really, you're buying a long-term asset that you're going to be into for a while, and then you can keep parlaying it into something else. You can 1031 it into something else, but then all of a sudden you're reducing what you can do on the next property. But ultimately, if you have a quality asset that's making you money every single year and you're able to use it, it's a good asset, a quality asset, why would you want to sell it, right? Well, you, it, you bought it for a reason as a long-term investment. But we see all the time people that use this as a tax strategy. They lose money on the property, and they're a year or two in. They're like, man, this is a drain. This sucks owning this property. Yep. I don't want this.
I'm then they're forced money. To sell it, and they can't even time when to recognize their depreciation recapture.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's not even like, they're forced to sell their, the motivation to buy something else after you just got out of a really bad one, probably not really good to 1031 into something else. You put yourself into a really bad position down the line when you don't focus first and foremost on the right assets in the right areas that can produce to be and make or to reach your property goals.
Right. I would just also add, nobody has to recognize depreciation recapture income. Yes, it exists. It's there. It's a possibility. But with proactive tax planning, as long as you are able to plan and strategize when you're going to sell this, when you're going to recognize it, you can find so many different ways to mitigate that, that depreciation recapture. Unless you bought an asset that you're forced to sell because it's about to break you. So I agree with 100% what you say.
Yeah. Awesome. Mike, this has been great, buddy. I know that, we'll tell Kevin we missed him. We were having some audio issues, and we'll love having both of you on here, but I always enjoy talking to you guys anytime I can. I always say it, and I can't say it enough. Anybody that is thinking about this game, this tax planning and strategy is so critical, and it is so important to get a hold of guys like Mike and Kevin and their entire team over at Revo, and in proactively in the beginning, you know, and really invest in yourself and the team members that you have first and foremost, so that you walk into this with your eyes wide open, you make the right moves along the way, so that ultimately then you just keep, you know, everything works out great. You keep parlaying into the next properties. And so where do we send people? Where, I know you guys have your Hidden Money podcast, and we've mentioned that a number of times, but where do we want to point people that really want a little bit more information on this?
Just go to revotaxpayer.com. Exactly how it sounds. I'm sure you'll put it in notes. Revotaxpayer.com, schedule a consult. We'd love to help you. But like Sean said, it's important not to penny pinch to do the right thing. You want to invest in the right partnership. And I'm telling you, we have a lot of short-term rental clients, some from Vodacy, some from other places, some that are self-taught. You look at our client base, I'm biased. I love Sean greatly, but I have a reason for being biased about the Vodacy program. The ones that have gone through the program and took it seriously and are following it, not that just joined it, but the ones that are actually following it, they're going and they're taking the classes. They're working with the experts that Sean's team introduces them to. They're leveraging the content in Vodacy. Those ones tend to perform a heck of a lot better. They're not the ones that are being forced to sell these properties. They're not the ones. So one last thing I always say is don't ever let your tax tail wag your business or investment dog. If you just want a tax benefit, short-term rentals will get you there. But if you're going to lose $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 a year after you get that tax benefit, it is not worth it. Don't do that. Find a good program. Don't do this blindly. Don't do this on your own. You need good partners in your corner for all facets of that business. And I can't highly recommend Vodacy more than I can.
Awesome. I appreciate it, buddy. I appreciate you saying that. And the feeling is mutual. Our entire Vodacy signature recipe revolves around, you know, really the who, not the how, surrounding yourself with the experts along the way. You guys are a critical expert in our success and being able to really parlay this and scale these businesses. And so, guys, as listeners, you guys always know we'll post all the ways to contact Mike and the entire team over there at Revo. in the show notes. So you can click on that, schedule a consult. If you're part of our Vodacy family, you know exactly where to find Mike and Kevin and inside of our group there. And so we will wrap up for today. Mike, I appreciate it, brother. You guys listening, we know how valuable your time is. We appreciate you spending it with us. Our goal is to help you walk into this short-term rental investing game with your eyes wide open. And we always bring on the people that are a lot smarter than me in a lot of different areas. And Mike and Kevin are definitely qualify for that. And so hopefully you guys enjoy these conversations as much as we do. If you got any value, share the show. If you know somebody else would like to be part of these conversations, share the show. Those things are very, very helpful for us. If you don't have anybody to share it with, like it or review it on whatever podcast platform you watch or listen on. And those algorithms will share it with other people just like you. And so those things are very much appreciated. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
For joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.